Terry Savage joins us from terrysavage.com. Hi, Terry.
Oh, got to talk about that tractor.
Intriguing, huh?
That's just America. How do you think the mules felt about the McCormick Harvester, the Reapers? That's 40 years ago now, maybe 120 years ago. My goodness. Why should anybody, people are quitting jobs in record numbers because of low pay. They don't like doing that work. Now we're going to use artificial intelligence and electronics and so forth to replace the boring work of machine, let the machines do the work. That's a future, John.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, another instance where you see that now is clerks at stores. I mean, like, not only are we doing self-scanning these days.
No, wait, John. What? Those are replaced by people like you and me. I am really getting good at that. And I want to know if when they had to raise the minimum wage, so prices had to go up in the stores, why now that I'm doing that minimum wage work every time I check out at a grocery store or Walmart or something, why the prices don't go down?
A lot of us resent that, too. They said, okay, so I know people who will wait in the line rather than scan it themselves so as to preserve the job of the person that's ringing them up, or to protest the fact that you're not getting a discount because you're doing that job now.
Exactly. But then I realized, even when there's a line open, I've gotten to be such a great bagger when I have a huge grocery order that I know what stuff goes in what bag, unlike they who just throw it in whatever the next bag comes around on the thing. And I like it better when I get it home and I can unpack it more easily. So progress is back to the future.
Do you ever get angry at the process, the system, and maybe it's not working as well?
When I buy something that I can't scan. I can't look up fruits and vegetables. Bananas I can look up. Red onions, other stuff. I hope there's somebody around to help me, and I'll say, look it, I just bought parsley or leaf lettuce. Could you? I don't know where that little thing is.
One silent way to protest that is to put it in your bag and not pay for it. The amount of honesty that this whole system is predicated on it should almost be uplifting. I mean, think about that. You could walk out with a free bag of groceries every day, and people generally don't do that. So that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Let's talk about taxes again, Terry. You wrote an article that's called Taxes Again. What are you writing about?
Well, I thought about this. This actually won't run for another week, but I thought we should talk about it today. The opening line was, I hate to bring this up right now, so early in the year, but it is time to think about filing your 2021 income tax return, which you'll be able to do sometime in the next 2 months. The IRS I spoke to yesterday, they haven't given the date when the immediate tax filing will be available. Many of the forms, not all of them, are out, and they gave me some information, so let me just hit a couple of highlights. I know we should start with this. Millions of people have not gotten their tax refunds for last year. I have been very patient, and I really like Eric Smith, who always answers my questions, but my blood is beginning to boil a little bit because now we're going into a new year. He said, no, do not try to adjust your current return that you're going to be filing for 2021 based on last year's return, not getting the refund. Do not amend that old return. It's just going to slow it down. He gave me a long, in fact, the reason I was talking to him is, I do a podcast at friendstalkmoney.org, and so I taped some stuff with him in it. We're going to tape that podcast Friday. And it'll go up. And he gave me all these things. We were very busy because the $10,200 came out where you don't have to pay taxes on unemployment. That came out last year after people filed. So we have to manually go back to those returns. And then people got stimuluses, and we were trying to make sure that they could be plussed up if they got really owed more stimulus. That took a lot of time, et cetera. Anyway, he gave me a long thing. But I'm going to tell you that I could feel my blood starting to boil on that one. Much worse than, how can I check out the leaf lettuce at Walmart? And I'm probably going to start ranting mid-March, I think, is all I can hold out to. And maybe start kind of a protest in Washington, D.C. that the IRS has held on to refunds, because I get the posts on my blog at terrysavage.com. I'm low income. I counted on that money. I need it. Where is it? And all I can say is eventually it'll get to you with 3% interest.
Yeah. I wonder if the IRS would be more motivated if after a month it goes to 4 and after 2 months it goes to 5.
Yeah. I think all Americans can now start protesting that, but I'm not going to go there today. The other thing is you're going to get two letters from the IRS. I asked of the IRS or the Treasury, but anyway, if you got a stimulus payment or if you received the child tax credit, look in your mailbox and don't file until you get it. Now, both those payments, the stimulus payment is tax-free. It's not, doesn't impact your income taxes. Ditto the child tax credit. But they're very busy. They're going to send out one or two letters, depending if you got both, letting you know the amount you received. Why? Because when you file your 2020 return and you didn't get enough stimulus payment, you'll need to know what you received to ask for more. And the child tax credit, a lot of people forget about this, but they enlarged it this year. It was something that was a refundable credit even for low-income people.
Yeah.
Now they started sending it out in July. Some people got 6 months of it. Some people didn't get it till August and they got 5 months of it. They're going to let you know what you receive so you can calculate how much more you can ask to be paid to you when you file your return in March or April.
I'm glad go ahead.
Okay. Well, I have one more big reminder, or two more, so go ahead and ask your question.
Well, I'm going to pause here and then we'll get to that. And in fact, I've been carrying around an article from the Wall Street Journal, some families brace for the end of the tax break, that child tax credit. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about that as well. You may have a question for Terry Savage, too, 312-981-7200. Terry, you were going to say something before the little break there. What was on your mind?
Oh, yeah, I want to do, there was an IRS sent out, speaking of the IRS, it's in this column that's posted at terrysavage.com, but they actually sent out another reminder today. Sure enough, I got a quick email from Eric Smith, my guy at the IRS, saying, remember, we just sent out a warning. I said, listen, I'm going to talk about it in radio in just a minute. Quarterly estimated tax payments. You haven't seen penalties, like the penalties and interest you get if you haven't paid in enough taxes, because sometime during the year 2021, now remember, let's just think about this. Last year we filed 2020 taxes and the deadline was May 17th. This coming 2 months, we're going to file 2021 taxes and the deadline will be April 15th. Actually, because of the holidays, it's April 18th. And you have an opportunity to make a quarterly estimated tax payment, usually January 15th. This year it is January 18th, again because of the President's Day holiday or something. Anyway, it's the 18th. If you have not paid in at least 90% of the taxes you're going to owe, which you don't really know yet because you haven't done your return yet, or 100% of last year's taxes aren't already in the government, by January, let's call it the 15th, even though we get a couple days grace this year, you could be liable for big penalties. Now, how could this happen? It could happen because you took your RMD and they didn't withhold enough or anything. It could happen because you sold something last year, you had capital gains, and no taxes were withheld. Right now, I mean like this week, you have to figure out if you've paid in enough taxes, and if you haven't, talk to your account, talk to your CPA, use your tax software, send in a check, certified, registered mail to the IRS, call it a quarterly estimated payment so you don't have a penalty. So that's number one. And there was something else. I have one other quick reminder. Any minute, you're going to get your year-end mutual fund statement for your IRA or 401k. Or maybe you don't even get paper statements. You look online. You want to immediately do this afternoon after you stop listening to us. Write down a list. You have three or four IRAs and a 401k maybe. If you're over 72 and will be required to take an RMD this year, it's based on the year-end, just ended 3 days ago, your year-end valuation of your IRA. So if you now have $389,400, you need to know what that amount is, and then you can either take it out, you know, a few thousand dollars a month. You can take out one lump sum the week before the end of the year, but it'll all be based on the statement you're about to get. So keep those year-end statements, write down the total of what your asset value was in all your IRAs and 401ks, and then you'll plug that into the calculator and take it out either during the year or by the end of the year. But you don't have to wait to figure out what you're going to have to take out this year. You should know because your statement's online or you're going to get it now. There you go.
Here's a question for you, Terry. I'm going to answer it. You tell me how I did, okay?
Okay.
Hey, John Williams, please ask Terry. It doesn't say, hey, John, what's your opinion, but I want to play. It says, please ask, if I have a little extra money each month, should I put it in my 401k or pay down the principal on my mortgage? Now, we don't know what the mortgage is rate that this guy's paying, but or gal, but let's assume that it's in the threes because that's what people have been able to get these days. And let's assume that this person is in their 60s. My answer would be to put it in a 401k. It's cheap money on your mortgage if you're only costing you 3%. And if you're putting it in some index fund, you've been getting better than 3%. I would say roll the dice, put it in the 401k. Your thoughts?
Well, this is interesting because I know what the right answer is. I've suspended the right answer for the last year. And last night I was playing backgammon. I was actually watching backgammon be played by someone who's really, really good at it. And he said, I don't care what it looks like. You always need to know the odds. And the odds say you should do this. And I said, but maybe just now. He said, it always comes back to the numbers. And that reminds me of a book, which I'm going to try and get the author on with you one day. And the column will come out in a week, called Money Magic by Lawrence Kotlikoff, who talks about this very subject of how the numbers say you don't know what you're going to get in stock market returns, especially given the fact that we've had a decade of above average returns, and that the best bet, devotes a whole chapter to it, and I asked him about it, is paying down your mortgage before you retire. Something I have always said, except that for this year I said, well, wait a minute. A year ago I said, you know, your mortgage money is so cheap, you might want to put it in the 401k. But as you get closer to retirement, the numbers say you're better off paying down the mortgage because even if it's only 3%, there's no guarantee that the money you put in now will give you a huge return before you have to start taking it out.
That's a good answer. Let's talk to Joe. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Hi, Joe. How can we help you?
Just like Rosberger, Rosberger's retiring,
Hey, Joe.
Okay, buddy.
All right.
You're on the air.
You have a good one. Thank you.
He's finishing up some other business there. We'll come back to Joe in a minute. Hey, Ellen, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Ellen?
Hi there. Terry, my mother passed away in late 2019. We filed her taxes. I filed them for her estate in 2020. We filed them actually early in 2020 and never got the refund. You know what happened with the IRS and still is happening with COVID. After hours and hours on the phone, I learned that her money was offset due to a possible alimony or child support or federal debt. Now, my mom was 93. None of those were possible. I've got a couple of Congress people involved. I just learned today that they've researched with the Treasury Department that indeed I'm correct. There is no debt. Now what? Do you have any ideas for me?
Yeah. You try this, and if not, you email me at terry@terrysavage.com because I have the direct line still somewhere. But we have something called the Taxpayer Advocate Service. Mm-hmm. So go to IRS. I don't know how far you're going to get, but give it one shot and then email me and remind me, Ellen, that you talked about this. If you have all that information, go to irs.gov/taxpayer-advocate or just search Taxpayer Advocate. It will give you the number. Give them all this information. If you don't get help, get back to me because I have a direct line there.
Thank you so much. And will they be paying us? I have not been able to close her estate because we're waiting for one. And will they be? Will this situation? Shall I be asking for interest on this because they've held the money from 2020?
That's a good question. If it's a lot of money, it might be worth it. I think you'll probably just be glad to get the principal. This is obviously an error on their part, and I will help you embarrass them. Although it's very hard to embarrass the IRS. That's the thing. It's hard to embarrass. They should be embarrassed that they haven't gotten refunds out to ordinary people who did all the right things. This is getting to be ridiculous. It's very hard to embarrass them, but I'm
What's the website for that advocate?
IRS.gov. Just search taxpayer advocate.
Taxpayer advocate. Okay, I hope that helps, Alan. Good luck to you on that. And Terry, let's start with this one. We'll take more calls and a couple of questions from our listeners as well on the phone after WGN Radio News. But Terry, when you're we do have enough time for this. Terry, when you're purchasing fruits and vegetables, make sure you take your selection with a sticker on it. On each of those, they have a PLU number, and if you can't scan it, you can punch the number in.
So that's what they told me. Thank you very much. If you have a wet bag of leaf lettuce, which you're using to decorate your turkey, yeah, someone should come over and put it in there for you. I'm paying for that.
I totally agree with you. That's Terry Savage, consumer advocate and financial analyst as well. 312-981-7200. Hi, it's John Williams. I'm here till 2 this afternoon. Speed Jokes, the replay, 1 hour from now. Hey, John Williams, here's a question for Terry Savage, and not you. My grandson is 14. He wants to start saving, investing. Can he do a Roth? If not, what would you recommend, says Randy.
Okay, he's interested, and so I'm going to give you a caveat and then tell you exactly what to do. He cannot start an IRA because he's not filing a tax return. He doesn't have earned income, so he can't have an IRA. But he can start investing in the stock market, and here's a little caveat. Money that he has in a custodial account that you open for him or his parents open for him will count very heavily against him, about 7 times more heavily against the family if they do apply for financial aid. But if you have a 14-year-old that wants to start investing, it's the principle of the thing, not so much the money. So we're not talking about a lot of money. Go to stockpile.com. Give him a gift certificate. You can make it for any stock or just a neutral one, and he gets to pick the stock. It could be as little as $100. And let him open an account there with his parents or you as a custodian, and he can buy and sell stocks. He can learn a lot about investing there. Just take him to stockpile.com. Let him pick 2 or 3 stocks if he wants. You know, if he's wearing Nike shoes, if that's what's in now, if he's playing certain games, you know, all the things that kids are interested in, let him start buying the stock. Maybe he wears an Apple Watch or something like that. He'll only get a teeny fraction of a share of Apple or Nike or whatever, but he'll start watching the price, and that's a great way to get a kid involved.
What a good answer. Stockpile.com.
Right.
We were at a little birthday get-together for my 1-year-old granddaughter, and I said, well, we'll contribute to her college. What would be the best advice for me to tell my son to save for his daughter's college education?
Oh, a 529 plan, without doubt. If they live in Illinois, BrightStart.com is the Illinois College 529 plan. It's been highly rated for the last 6 or 7 years. They made some big changes in it. So you get it also, if they live in Illinois, they'll get a tax deduction on their state return for up to $10,000 worth of contributions. And as a grandparent, I think you're going to get a tax deduction too.
Really?
If you're an Illinois resident and they open the Bright Start plan in Illinois. If not, go to savingforcollege.com, and they can go to Fidelity or Vanguard and look at their 529 plans. Those are all good plans, and you can use the money. You can be in any state's plan, and you can use the money for college in any state. So 529 college savings plan is the way to go.
One last thing about that, and then let's get back to phone calls. But should I worry about the performance of those various custodians of the money?
Well, that's why if you go to savingforcollege.com, you can read the ratings of every state's plan. But I'm telling you that for the last few years, Illinois has gotten really very good ratings. They lowered their fees. They changed their investment options. I'm going back to 2008 when I really talk about Terry going on a rant. That was a very public one because the previous state treasurer and so forth did some really things that were really, I thought, terrible. But Bright Start is a great plan now. It's highly rated. And you don't have to be the great investor. You can say, I have a 1-year-old grandchild, invest in their age-based plan. Knowing you're going to have 16, 17, 18 years till the money's used, they'll invest a little more aggressively for a young child than they will for the ones that are a sophomore or junior in high school that'll need the money in the next couple of years.
Paul has a question for Terry Savage. You're on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Terry, I'm eligible to sign up for Medicare next year. I turn 65, but I've got a Blue Cross plan from my prior employer that I pay for that's such a good plan, they don't even offer it anymore. I've been grandfathered in. So do I have to sign up for Medicare?
You don't have to sign up for Medicare Part B, but you should sign up for Medicare Part A, and you should make sure, this is really tricky, depends on how many employees your employer has, the plan you're in, whether your plan becomes secondary to Medicare. This is a very complex question, though it looks easy. And I'm going to refer you to either Medicare.gov, but if you really want personalized advice, go to 65incorporated.com, and they will give you personalized advice, because it depends on what your employer plan is and how many employees, believe it or not, more than 20 or fewer than 20, the employer has, as to which is primary.
Okay, very good. Thanks.
Yep. Sorry, good luck, I can't give you a specific advice.
I never even thought about that. I would think you would have the option. If your Blue Cross plan is better than what Medicare offers, you could screw that up and not keep the plan you have?
Well, what happens is, if you have a small employer, you're actually better off taking Medicare Part B and your plan becomes secondary payer. And I think I've got that correct. I learned that for 3 months a year. I know that really intensely in October and November and December.
Right.
And then it flies out of my mind. But I know for sure that you need to find out whether your employer plan qualifies as a substitute for signing up for Medicare Part B.
This is a question.
Many people don't take Medicare Part B. They're still working. They have a great plan, and they work for a large company. So the odds are, sign up for Part A. It doesn't cost you anything. Wait for Part B until you retire. But I just like, there's that little caveat quirk in there that's always an issue.
This is Stan. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Stan, what can we do for you?
Hey, Terry, I was wondering, when you when you say retire at 70 because of whatever the percentage-wise, do you take in that average lifespan of people?
Are you average, Stan?
I'm just saying average. Everyone is average.
Do you consider yourself an average guy?
I'm just saying the average lifespan.
But I'm going to ask you a question. Do you consider yourself, think about all the things you do. I don't know whether you play ball or you're a computer genius. Do you think you're an average guy?
Yeah, I think I'm an average guy.
Okay, I think I'm above average woman. But I'm going to give it to you from an expert.
Wait a minute. Is this about taking Social Security before the...
No, this is about retiring. She says, she should retire around about 70 years old. And I just took in what is the average lifespan of U.S. citizen. That's what I'm saying,
Okay, now I'm going to give you advice from an economic genius. We're going to get him on the air. Larry Kotlikoff, economist, the guy who wrote Get What's Yours from Social Security and on Medicare. And his new book is called Money Magic. I've been through this so many times, I've got stickers on it. Here's a quote from him. When it comes to considering your life expectancy, think of yourself as just one of those outcomes, all the outcomes that go into making the average. You may die early or you may die late, but you will never die on time. Your life expectancy is just the average of the eventual death ages of tens of thousands of people just like you. Since you're going to kick the bucket once and only once, and you don't know when that will be, there's only one longevity outcome to which you need to pay particular attention. It's the financial worst case outcome, the one in which you live to your maximum age of life.
So if you're 70, you should imagine that you're going to live 20 plus more years and budget accordingly.
The point is, you can look at those, the average life expectancy of a 65-year-old today for a male is a year longer, but I think that we're somewhere up around now 79 years, okay? So you may think, and I know I start to think that way, this is how my mother died. How many more years do I have left? But the fact of the matter is that the range of outcomes that could happen to a person your age or my age gets up to be 97, 98. A couple of people, remember when Willard on the Today Show used to say, Mildred, the 100th birthday today. Let's hear it for Mildred. She drinks a glass of beer every day. More and more people are living to be 100. So the possibility exists. It may not be the life you want. You may be, you know, bedridden or in a wheelchair or whatever. But the fact is, it's entirely possible when you're making your financial plans that you could be that one and you don't know. So if you're planning, you should plan for the outside extreme.
That's good advice, and that's all the time we have. We did not get to the article I was going to ask you about, I think, next week, and that is the families bracing for the end of the tax break, which happens in mid-January, which is about where we are. It's the 5th today. But let's talk more about that next week, then.
Absolutely.
That's Terry Savage. You can visit her at terrysavage.com. 12:44 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. North Shore University Health System and Edward Elmhurst Health have completed their merger today. The wedding creates the third largest health system in Illinois. It creates a system of 9 hospitals, including 8 acute care hospitals, Linden Oaks Behavioral Health Hospital in Naperville, and 300 ambulatory locations. The system will have 25,000 employees and 6,000 physicians. Total revenue is expected to be about $5 billion in the first year of operation. Recreational sales of marijuana in Illinois hit a record last year. The final number was about $1.4 billion, more than double the previous year's sales. There are 110 dispensaries in Illinois. Almost a third of the recreational cannabis was purchased by out-of-state customers. Numbers for medicinal marijuana for December aren't available yet, but January through November, they totaled $362 million. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food and an intriguing story I just asked my friend George Butel about. He's a farmer out in the Will Kendall Grundy County area. Steve, what have you got?
Well, lots of buzz about John Deere's announcement out of the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas about its new autonomous tractor that it's going to be selling this year. But driverless tractors have been around for several years. And today's business of food begins with a dramatization.
911, what's your emergency?
Yes, ma'am, I'm out here. I'm watching a tractor go up and down the field, and there's no driver. The driver must have fallen off. You better get somebody out here and see what's going on. Somebody may be hurt.
So the sheriff runs out there to see what's going on.
It's happened on numerous occasions when we're out in a field performing a field operation, and the police show up.
That's Craig Rupp, the CEO of a company called Sabanto.
We are taking autonomy into agriculture.
Essentially, Sabanto takes regular tractors and turns them into robots, tilling fields, planting, and other field operations nonstop, 24/7, no driver needed. In fact, the farmer can
go to bed at 10 o'clock and wake up at 6 in the morning, and it's still hard at it. And she worked all night long.
Yes, he said she. They attach female names to their tractors. And the one we're talking about is Molly. But back to the police. What did they say when they showed up?
It's funny. When they pull in, they see us. You know, we have laptops. We're monitoring. And I think they know something's going on here, something unique. And it doesn't look like an emergency.
And those driverless tractors attract a lot of looky-loos.
I swear, it's every 15 minutes, you know, people stop on the road, just a revolving door of farmers driving by, and then they pull in, and they want to see the system, they want to, you know, learn more about what we're doing.
Have you thought about putting a mannequin in the tractor seat?
You know, that thought did cross her mind.
Craig Rupp, CEO of Sabanto, S-A-B-A-N-T-O.
It's Japanese for servant.
Chicago Board of Trade right now, a mixed bag. Beans are up about 4 cents. Corn's down about 6, and wheat right now is trading about 8 cents lower. From the farm to your belly, today is National Keto Day, if you're on that diet. Also, well, it goes along with that, National Whipped Cream Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Abigail Ingram joins us now, though, director of Women in Entrepreneurship Institute at DePaul University. Abigail, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. Glad to be on.
Talk to me a little bit about what you guys do.
Happy to. We are the first comprehensive institute for women founders. We're integrating academic learning, research, business support through incubation, funding, and public policy, all based out of DePaul University. So we are on the ground with women founders offering a pre-accelerator and an accelerator program to help their businesses meaningfully grow and scale.
Just for any women or just DePaul grads?
We invite women all over Chicagoland to join us, so no DePaul connection needed. We are community-facing.
Is it a fee-for-service sort of thing or a free resource? What do you do?
So we have this incredible board of women entrepreneurs who launched this initiative. Their gifts kindly cover all of the costs for women participating, so it is free to participants. We actually have applications open right now. So go ahead and head over to the Women in Entrepreneurship Institute website if you are a woman founder in Chicago and you're interested in joining our program.
So I apply and then get accepted into the program, what, based on the viability of my business?
Yeah, we want to make sure that we're a good fit for the founders in our programs as well as them being a good fit for us. So there are a ton of amazing programs all around Chicago that are helping businesses grow. We come in for businesses that are between $50,000 and $1 million annual revenue who really want to launch into seven and eight figures of business. So we're heavily focused on finance. We're looking for entrepreneurs who, like most, maybe haven't gone to business school, who are looking to get that business acumen, and we can equip them with that and also provide just this incredible supportive group of women to help them grow.
What are some examples of the businesses specifically that have used your service?
Sure. So we are industry agnostic. So we have a ton of different types of businesses from architecture. AP Monarch is an incredible firm, women-led firm, to food and beverage, companies like Aged and Infused, Catan Pisco, to event spaces, Stan Mansion and ICANN Collective. All of these businesses, whether they're in industries that we think of being more successful during the pandemic or perhaps shrinking during the pandemic, every one of them has survived, every business that we've worked with, and over two-thirds of them have grown. So quite a range.
Here's a statistic I heard. Maybe you can verify this for me. I think I can recall it correctly, that during the pandemic, more women went into private business than men and more black women than white women. That black women was in a specific niche of entrepreneurs in this country. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. The quickest growing segment of entrepreneurs is black women. And Chicago, we have the highest concentration of women entrepreneurs of any city in the country. So we are uniquely positioned to take this growth in women's entrepreneurship and really add to our city's economic recovery. We have this incredible new partnership that we started last year with the YWCA, offering the first accelerator program for black women in Chicago. And we're reprising that, actually still taking applications for that through the end of this week. So we see a lot of women who are leaving corporate environments. Perhaps policies aren't set up for women who have caretaking responsibilities, or it's simply time to have some more flexibility in their schedules. Women are ready and willing and able to start businesses, and we're seeing it in record numbers.
Where's the ground real fertile then? What would you suggest if I say, okay, I don't have a business yet, but I want to try? What would be a good area? I suspect you'll say, well, what's your expertise? But it seems like retail is very popular online right now.
Absolutely. E-commerce has increased significantly in the past year. All of us are online looking for things to buy, particularly as we are less willing to maybe go into large box stores. There's also a huge push to shopping local. So people want to get their products from someone that is within their immediate community. Overall, though, the pandemic has completely transformed the business landscape. So there's opportunity for innovative ideas in lots of different sectors.
Do these women face the same hiring challenges that the rest of the work world does?
Yeah, so that labor shortage is definitely on every business owner's mind. The lucky thing for people who are starting businesses right now is most people can't afford to hire or aren't ready to hire for about the first few months or even a few years of their business anyway. So the entrepreneurs who start off as solos, which most do, they're wearing every hat. They are the lead salesperson and the CEO. They're designing the products, they're delivering the services, they're cleaning the office, they're doing literally everything. So the good news is that starting a business right now if it's difficult to hire someone, you probably need a couple months or years of revenue to be able to do that anyway.
Mm. Abigail Inger is on a line, director of the Women in Entrepreneurship Institute at DePaul University. Find out more at DePaul.edu, DePaul.edu. Folks are making lemonade when the pandemic came along and delivered us lemons, and it sounds like you're a great resource for people, Abigail.
Oh, thank you for that. We do our best, and we look forward to continuing to serve more women in 2022.
DePaul.edu. Thanks.